Hey, it's Latif from Radiolab. Our goal with each episode is to make you think, how did I live this long and not know that? Radiolab, adventures on the edge of what we think we know. Listen wherever you get podcasts.
We live in hard and stirring times, too sad for mirth, too rough for rhymes, for songs of peace have lost their chimes. And that's what's the matter.
Often described as the tide that turned the war, the Battle of Gettysburg stands as one of the most pivotal moments in our nation's history, and it began 150 years ago today. Dressed in Union blue and Confederate gray, 11,000 reenactors descended on Gettysburg yesterday to reenact Pickett's charge, a major turning point in this crucial battle. A crowd of 10,000 watched as Union reenactors fought off a Southern attack and eventually forced the rebels into retreat. Jeff Nilsen is an historian and director of archives for the Saturday Evening Post. The magazine sent reporters to cover the Battle of Gettysburg back in 1863, and it's one of the few publications that covered the Civil War and is still around covering news today. Jeff says that Gettysburg stands as the bloodiest battle in the history of the Western Hemisphere, a strategic move by General Robert E. Lee.
To know why this battle took place is important to recognize the ferocity of the fighting. At the time, Robert E. Lee did not believe he could militarily conquer the North. He believed that he could discourage the North out of the war. He had beat the Union Army repeatedly and now was coming north to, he hoped, beat it decisively in the plains of South Central Pennsylvania. If he could accomplish that, he believed that there would the anti-war sentiment in the North would grow so great that the North would have no other choice except to start negotiating with the South for a peace and a separation. On the other hand, the Union came into this battle recognizing that Lee had defeated them time and time again. They had never won a decisive victory in 2 years of fighting, and morale in the North was running very low. And there was a determination among the Union soldiers to really make this one count. There are accounts from soldiers' letters coming into the battle, telling their wives and their family, we know this is the decisive battle. We know this is going to determine the outcome. And they were right in that regard.
And from what you know from letters, can you take us inside the mind maybe of the average Union soldier? Fighting to end slavery? Probably not.
Some were. Some actually had taken that cause to heart. But many of them had joined in the first flush of patriotic fervor, and they thought that war was a way to get a name for themselves, to get a job, earn money, to get off the farm and away from their family for a while and have some adventure. So that was a big attraction. Also, they saw the Confederacy as traitors who had to be put down. That was a stronger sentiment than the liberation of slaves. Though there was the recognition in the Union that ultimately this is a fight about slavery. Because we know this, because it's been studied, I can give you a profile, at least of the Union soldier. Coming into the battle, the average Union soldier was 25 years old. He was 5 feet 8 inches, weighed 140 pounds. He was born in this country. He worked on a farm, and he was single. And his chances of becoming a casualty in this coming fight was 1 in 4.
In the Battle of Gettysburg.
In the Battle of Gettysburg.
Now, what about a composite of the average Confederate soldier, to the best that you can?
Well, the Confederate soldier was fighting for states' rights. That was definitely very clear in his mind, though what states' rights meant to him was going to be different than what it meant to the legislators in, say, Mississippi or Virginia. But they were very determined to be independent of the United States, and they were going to fight whoever was put in their way to earn what they considered their freedom from the United States government. It's harder to tell the profile of the Confederate soldier. The record keeping wasn't as efficient and as thorough. A lot of soldiers just signed up and went off to the war. And there wasn't a lot of paperwork that accompanied them. We can assume, though, that they were rather similar to the average Union soldier. though they probably would have had a greater variation in age and certainly would not have been as healthy or well-fed coming into this battle or as well cared for, because the Confederacy had been fighting an uphill battle against reduced supplies for at least a year and a half.
And let's just be clear, because it probably bears remembering, in this era of modern warfare and drones and remote sensors and artillery that can fire 50 miles, this battle really was hand-to-hand.
That's right. The artillery, of course, wasn't seeing the people that they were killing. You could see that far out in the field, but it wasn't personal. For the infantry, though, the attacks of the Confederacy against the Union line, it was very much face-to-face. You saw who you were shooting. Sometimes you hit them, sometimes you didn't, depended how well you could shoot with a musket. But when the firing began, usually in whole lines of soldiers, great holes would open up in the attacking lines of the enemy. And you would see these men go down in huge numbers and lay there waiting for help or maybe beyond help. Then the next line would come up and you'd be firing again and they would get closer. And the amazing thing in all this fighting was how closely matched the two sides were and how often the Confederacy broke the Union line, pushed them back, and Union reinforcements came in just at the last minute to repair the line and push the Confederates back. It happened again and again and again, and most particularly on July 3rd at the peak of what is known as Pickett's Charge.
Jeff Nielsen, historian and director of the archives at Saturday Evening Post. Of course, we can't leave this discussion without touching on the Gettysburg Address. President Lincoln just a couple of years later, and we all know about the address in 47 years ago, but I wonder if American history and Americans would have as strong a view or even be aware of the Battle of Gettysburg as they are today if it hadn't been for the posthumous speech that Lincoln decided to give there a couple of years later. If that hadn't happened, would we be having this discussion today, do you think?
I don't think so. And when people have discussed Gettysburg with me, inevitably the address comes up, even though it occurred in November, not in July. It's interesting to note that the Gettysburg Address was the commemoration of a cemetery that was built in the town, because thousands and thousands of casualties still littered the field far beyond the capability of any townspeople to bury them. So many of the bodies lay out there for days or weeks and making the area almost uninhabitable. So the decision to build a commemorative cemetery was a matter of necessity, but also it was, for Lincoln, a way to memorialize these deaths and also the general cause and to explain to Americans why they had fought and what sense it made for this great slaughter of men to have happened.
Jeff Nielsen is historian and director of archives for the Saturday Evening Post. The Saturday Evening Post reported directly on the Battle of Gettysburg, with just a handful of other publications that are still around today. Jeff Nielsen, thank you.
Thanks very much.